Social impact. Just what are public-private partnerships? How are we keeping children safe? Children are being reduced to data points so outcomes can be tracked. Now there's a predatory model based on profit. When you are talking about money and children, the system gets gamed and you, the parent, lose your voice. Is it really informed consent? You decide. Here's your host, Lynn Davenport.
You're listening to Social Impact, and I'm your host, Lynn Davenport. I'm an education researcher, and in recent years, I've been focusing on the Global Impact Investing Network, pay-for-success models, using smart contracts, and social impact bonds. Social impact investors are using SARS-CoV-2, which is, in my opinion, a bioweapon, to usher in telemedicine, digital immunity passports, forced vaccines, contact tracing, and other surveillance tools to limit our freedoms and capitalize on the crisis. Another thing that I'm seeing is transhumanism, and that's the melding of man and machine. And I believe that's another thing that they're using the virus for. But today I have Dr. Richard Fleming with us, and he's a PhD, an MD, a JD, a cardiologist, a nuclear cardiologist, jurisprudence, doctor of law, a researcher, inventor, and author. But I forgot one thing. This is the only thing that we share. You're a singer.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. And I'm just going to say right up front that people can go to FlemingMethod.com to find out more about you and really dig into your CV and understand what you've published and what you've done out there. But so I'm going to start off with two. Why should we listen to you over our local Department of Health and Human Services guy, Dr. Philip Huang, or our county judge, Clay Jenkins? Why should we listen to you about SARS-CoV-2?
First, thank you for the opportunity to appear here with you today. And thank you for mentioning what we have in commonality. The primary reasons why somebody would want to listen to what I have to say about SARS-CoV-2 and or COVID-19, the actual disease state, is really twofold. Well, threefold, I guess I should say. First is that the actual explanation for why people die with COVID-19 and how they respond to this virus is a part of a theory that I first proposed in 1994 at American Heart Association meetings, where I explained that this inflammatory and thrombotic response that causes heart disease and a variety of other diseases, that viruses and bacteria are one of the things that actually cause that inflammatory thrombotic response. So this is why people are getting sick with the virus and why some people end up actually developing COVID-19. The second is that the ability to actually know what's going on with this virus is dependent upon a way of testing and measuring it. Many people are aware of the PCR test, which looks for presence of genetic information of the virus. Other tests include antibodies, but none of those really tell you what's going on inside the body, where the infection and the inflammation is going on. And that's where, a method, Fleming method or FMTVDM, that's talked about on the website, measures what's going on inside the tissue. And that's how we were able to find treatments for this virus and to better understand what's really going on with it. And third is the fact that I've conducted the only, as far as I know, published randomized clinical trial or national clinical trial, looking at a variety of treatments, looking at SARS-CoV-2, what works and what doesn't work.
Okay, that's helpful. And so we'll just go right into the virus. So I've seen you speak before, and I understand that this is a non-naturally occurring virus. Now, whether we can say or not that this was man-made and it is a bioweapon, I know that you as a professional, you've remained neutral on that, right? Or you can't say one way or the other.
Well, as a scientist, I can tell you that 99.5% that this is a man-made virus. Okay. There is all sorts of data that shows that federal money from the Department of Defense, from the National Institutes of Health, from the National Institutes of Allergies and Infectious Disease, from Health and Human Services, from the FDA, and a variety of other federal agencies have paid for what's called gain of function research, which is a method of trying to increase the ability of, in this case, a virus to infect and cause harm to people. That money has been paid for by federal tax dollars. It's occurred for over two decades. There is data that shows that through NIAID and Dr. Fauci, monies were paid to Peter Daszak at EcoHealth in the United States. Daszak paid Ralph Barrick at the University of North Carolina and Xuzheng Li at the Wuhan Virology Institute to do research in gain of function. They have published papers where they admit that they mutated the virus, that they made changes within the virus to increase its infectivity. In 2015 to 2016, they informed the world that they could make a more infectious virus that would, in fact, produce a pandemic. Those monies continued to flow even when blocks were put on by the Obama administration and by the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. So that money has continued to funnel. Now, the only thing that is short of my being able to say 100% is if they actually came forward and signed documents that prove that that they did it, that they admit to it. And so one of the things that I hope to occur from listeners tuning into this program is for people to understand that they need to actually be involved in taking action on this. Mm-hmm. If we're going to actually prevent this from happening more in the future, and there's evidence to suggest that the variants themselves may be the results of vaccines that are SARS-CoV-3 and perhaps beyond, then we're going to actually have to take action as a people to prevent that from happening. And that means addressing the gain of function, addressing the treatments to be made available that are there, addressing the vaccines, and investigating, indicting, prosecuting, and criminally putting in jail those involved.
Okay. And I have done, I've read about what's happening at the University of Texas, and that is one place where the gain of function research has been done, and they have ties to the Wuhan Institute. And so, you know, we need to name names and the local players. And in Texas, I know that they've been involved at the university level.
Right. In fact, several universities, University of Texas, University of Iowa, University of Wisconsin, Vanderbilt University, a wide variety. And those are just the ones that we have data on. Mm-hmm. So this type of research could have had some potential real benefit. It could have benefit for understanding what some other country might do to the United States. We know, for example, that anthrax underwent gain of function research in Russia, mm-hmm. and the release of that organism killed a number of people in Russia. It took about 36 months before that was proven. The Russian government tried to explain to people that it was bad beef in the area when in fact it was poor ventilation system in their bioweapons systems.
But I want to focus more on how it could be used for nefarious purposes. So essentially it made the virus more effective and more deadly, and especially if you have inflammation and comorbidities.
Right. So, excuse me. There's actually two well-known inserts into what's called the spike protein. And everybody, I think, has become painfully aware of the spike protein and its attachment to our cells. One of the inserts is an HIV insert, an HIV glycoprotein 120 that the researchers have admitted to inserting into the virus. Another one is a set of four amino acids called PRRA. And those four amino acids increase the infectivity of the virus mm-hmm. by a factor of 10 to 20 fold. Because those two inserts were placed into the spike protein also has an area that it's called a prion-like domain near where it attaches to our cells. And that prion-like domain produces things like Lewy bodies that produces diseases like Alzheimer's. And it produces what's called spongiform encephalopathy, which is what the general public knows as mad cow disease. Now, the animal models already show that that happens. It increases this process occurring within a matter of a couple weeks, which is about a year and a half in human terms.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about the vaccine.
Here's a fact. Too much of today's journalism is politically biased. So where should you turn to get accurate, leading-edge information that you can trust? The Epoch Times. The Epoch Times covers the news the way you need it, unfiltered and accurate. Cutting-edge topics like the danger of the Chinese Communist Party, the pandemic, Russia, the Middle East, the economy, and news you won't hear anywhere else. The Epoch Times is free from the influence of governments, corporations, or political parties. You get to form your own opinions. here's a special introductory offer. You can get 1 month subscription to the Epoch Times weekly print newspaper, as well as unlimited access to their dynamic website for just $1. That's right, $1. Go right now to trustednewspaper.com. That's trustednewspaper.com to subscribe. Do it now. trustednewspaper.com.
We're back with Dr. Richard Fleming. This is Lynn Davenport, and you're listening to Social Impact. So in the last section or session, we were talking about the virus. Now I want to talk more about the vaccine. So like the virus, which is a non-naturally occurring virus, then the vaccine is also non-naturally occurring. And you've mentioned before, when I've seen you speak before, that it's not just a vaccine, it's actually a drug. And that drug, I've also heard, is an injectable operating system. And I've also heard people talk about the software of life. And when I mentioned in the opening about transhumanism, I know that Israel seeks to be the world leader in transhumanism. I know that Israel has, Netanyahu has been bragging about this green pass that you have to have in order to go anywhere to show that you've been vaccinated. So can we talk about the idea that this is an injectable operating system, this vaccine?
Right.
Do you agree?
As I've told you before, unless I know something for an absolute fact, I won't give it to you as an absolute fact, because mm-hmm. I want people to be able to take the information that I provide to them and know that there's solid science behind it versus mm-hmm. speculation.
Yeah, but you do agree that it is a non-naturally occurring vaccine.
Right.
You would
So, and that's one of the important things, is that recognizing that the spike protein itself is not naturally occurring, that it's been produced by gain of function, then there's no way that you could argue that the vaccine using that same genetic sequence could be anything but a man-made product.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that should be particularly concerning to anybody promoting the vaccines. The reality is that these vaccines are telling your cells to make a lot of spike protein. And these spike proteins, we know for a fact, cross the blood-brain barrier.
Mm-hmm.
And even though heart problems and other diseases like respiratory problems and pneumonia are an issue, the real potential long-term sequelae may be the brain damage that's caused to people. And the vaccines carry much more potential than the naturally occurring virus.
Okay.
A virus itself will only introduce one what's called mRNA sequence every time it injects into a cell. The Pfizer and Moderna mRNA vaccines carry about 13 billion mRNAs. The Johnson & Johnson, which is made by Janssen, carries 50 billion DNA. And so as far as concerns about it with transhumanism, one of the papers that I did put on FlemingMethod.com is a paper that shows that the mRNA actually inserts into the human DNA from this spike protein.
And which would then alter your...
Well, if it's inserting into the DNA, it's automatically changing the DNA and coding for that to be done. Now, I suspect they're in the early stages of that, because any good scientist will test out anything. A good scientist meaning somebody who's testing a scientific hypothesis, mm-hmm. not necessarily a good person, okay?
Okay.
So, you know, if I were running a sequence and trying to determine what I could get to happen, I would start with something simpler like this. And once you've accomplished that and you know you can make it happen, then you would go to something more advanced if you had nefarious motives.
So I could ask, when they say trust the science, I could say, which science, the good science or the bad science?
Right. And so I think you can trust the science. The question is trusting the scientist.
Correct.
Okay. And unfortunately, I come from the human population, and mm-hmm. there's good.
I do too.
Yeah. And
I'd like
and
to keep
so,
it that way.
Yes. I got that. That was very good. The reality is there's good and bad people. You can't, know whether the people that are actually working on something are working on it for a good reason or a bad reason. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons that I stopped some of my earlier research in life had to do with my concerns for what other people would do with that research. And I made that decision that I was not going to allow that type of knowledge base to continue on. But not everybody is of that mindset. So the reality is that the vaccines provide a lot more of the spike protein, even if it doesn't provide for the rest of the virus. And that spike protein itself is very detrimental. What we also know to address this topic is that the injections of these vaccines do not stay at the site of injection as people are promoting them to do. The reason why we know that is because there was a lipid nanoparticle. This is the type that Pfizer and Moderna use. Mm-hmm. Study that was published back about 3 to 4 years ago, where they showed in animal models that when it was injected, that the vaccine was found not just in the muscle of the animals, but the brain, the heart, the bone marrow, the lungs, the liver, every organ tissue. And that company that did that research did it with an influenza virus. And the name of that company is Moderna.
That's good to know. And it's quite frightening. If it's crossing the blood-brain barrier, if you're finding it in all the organs and other parts of the body, it's not at the site of the
right. Infection. I mean, it's very clear. It's their own data. They provided it. Thank you very much. I think they were called Darwinian Chemical Systems when they were first funded by the U.S. government.
Fitting. Okay, I don't want to end this session without talking about the emergency use authorization, because if it's not FDA approved, then how did it get to market, or how did it get to where it is now?
Right. Well, there's four conditions required for emergency use authorization. And the last one is that there's no defined treatments. And I know we're going to get to that in the next segment. Mm-hmm. But an emergency use authorization is not an approval of a drug being used. And I think it's important to read through the emergency use authorization documents of all three of these vaccines.
Which I think separates you from a lot of the doctors that are speaking right now in public about whether they're for or against the vaccine. They're not talking about this important thing.
Right. It's unfortunate, because if you actually read through the documents, most everybody is hearing about vaccine efficacy, or the tendency for somebody to come down with COVID is really what the definition of that is. And if you go through the emergency use authorization numbers and you do the analysis of the people who do not get COVID, whether they've been vaccinated or not, and you do what scientists like myself do, statistically analyze it to determine if the difference is meaningful, it turns out that there is no significant difference in the number of people who come down with COVID-19 who got the vaccines versus the people who didn't get the vaccines.
So that's just another reason why I will not be taking the vaccines. So would you suggest that we take it or not?
Well, if I suggest that we take it or not, I'm providing medical advice. Okay. So I can't really do that. I can tell I can tell you that I have not and will not.
Okay. That's all I need to know.
Social Impact will be right back. Make sure you subscribe to the OBBM Network podcast on Spotify, iHeart, Apple, or Google, wherever you listen to podcasts.
When it's time to perform, it's too late to practice. First Safety Training in DFW supports local communities and churches through firearms training and nonviolent dispute resolution training. Understand the laws related to weapons and deadly force, handgun use and safety, and proper storage practices. A trained and licensed gun-carrying citizen will react quicker to protect themselves and others. Call 214-808-9757 to schedule your Introduction to Handguns, License to Carry, Active Shooter, Church Security, and Survival Training. Be prepared for the best possible outcome of a weaponized attack. Make sure the law is on your side in the event deadly force is necessary. Call 214-808-9757 and work with former law enforcement trainers and range officers. Meet all municipal, county, state, and federal regulations. Understand your gun and how to care for it properly. Call First Safety Training at 214-808-9757 today.
This is Lynn Davenport, and you're listening to Social Impact, and we're here with Dr. Richard Fleming. And in the previous segment, we were talking about the vaccine. And one thing that I want to talk about is the variant. Mm-hmm. And they just closed the Parkland Hospital COVID unit. This is the second time they've done that, which is a good sign. But now you're hearing about the variant that everyone's talking about that is, oh, here's the next wave. And we all, you know, fear the next lockdown. But what's important to note on that variant is that it follows on the heels of the vaccine or the vaccination sequence, meaning the variant could possibly be, could it be released through these vaccines?
Well, it's certainly a possibility. One of the things that we've talked about before is the fact that the mRNA for the spike protein can't be the only thing that's in the vaccines, because that doesn't provide enough information for the cells of our bodies to actually make the spike protein. Mm-hmm. There's other parts of that, of the RNA from that virus that's required. And so since the vaccine companies have told us that the only genetic information is for the spike protein, and since that's not possible to then produce the spike protein, it means that the pharmaceutical companies making the vaccines have not been completely honest with us. And that raises questions about how much you can really trust them for anything else. If you track where the vaccines have been given in the world, they precede the onset of the new variants. And so there's more than one variant. And it's also proof that the virus is a real biological entity, that it's not some imaginary thing, because it's our ability to trace those differences in the viruses. And it's also important to know that viruses do not become more aggressive. That the goal of a virus is to live, and to live, it needs its host, in this case, the human, to live. So a virus that becomes more aggressive will kill the host and then it dies. So viruses don't become more aggressive naturally. More evidence that things are being manipulated and played with. And so since I can't trust the pharmaceutical companies and the vaccine manufacturers and what they're doing, I have no reason to believe that the vaccines do not represent something other than SARS-CoV-3 or SARS-CoV-4, explaining a possible reason for why the variants follow on the heel of these vaccines.
That's frightening. And, you know, normally I ask at the end of these podcasts is, what's the social impact of this? And I think we already know what the social impact of this is, of this virus, is the isolation, the chance that people could really become sick from the vaccine, sicker than possibly what would happen with the actual virus. But I want to focus more on the solutions. And you've mentioned before about with this research, with this gain of function research, it's very important that we stop this through litigation and through defunding the programs and the universities that are doing this kind of research, because it's clearly dangerous. And I want to talk about treatment, because it's important too. With, you look at all these health experts and they rarely mention how to treat this. And I know when people were going into Parkland Hospital, in my assessment, they were smothering them with ventilators and people were not able to advocate for their loved ones, and they were dying alone and not getting the right treatment. And we know all these different doctors have come out saying, okay, you need budesonide, or you need zinc, or you need an antibiotic. There's different ways that they've treated it, and they've had successful, or they've had success with the treatment. But I think we have neglected empowering people with treatment, preventive treatment, and treatment once you get the virus.
Right. So there's several points, obviously, in that question. I'm not sure I'm an advocate of preventive treatments, because I don't promote prevention for, you might end up with high cholesterol or you might end up with cancer.
Well, but preventive meaning take care of, if you have inflammatory issues,
right.
You got diabetes,
right? Absolutely.
Don't be surprised if this virus attacks you hard, and they don't talk about that.
Exactly. And it's the people with what's called the comorbidities, all these inflammothrombotic diseases that have done worse with the infection. And those people really needed to be working much harder on controlling those problems. In fact, locking everybody down. The changes in diets and the changes in exercise schedules only promoted those diseases. What we're seeing now with the vaccines are the healthy people coming up with more of the problems, because their immune systems are doing what they're supposed to. And remember those numbers I said about how much genetic material is getting into people. Mm-hmm. You have a normal functioning person with 13 billion or 50 billion compared to one, you're going to get the same type of response in the healthy people. Wow. So that's another concern with the vaccines. I think there's a lot of things that should be done as far as the treatments are concerned. Never before as a physician have I ever been aware of people coming into a hospital with a breathing problem not being given what we normally give people to try drugs to open their airways.
And that was not being done. So
not being done. We were not treating people that were bedridden to prevent in this case the formation of blood clots, and these people were all put on bed rest. The ventilators were not used properly. There's been a lot of studies that show that you have to give people about half as much air every time the machine breathes, or you will end up with a dead patient who has these inflammatory diseases. So there are a number of things that were done erroneously to begin with. And then the handcuffing, if you will, of physicians being told there are no treatments. Never before have we taken this approach in society where we've decided that the federal government or federal agencies tell physicians how to practice medicine. Good physicians will routinely look to see what they can do for their patients, and to be told that they can't do that.
Things like hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin.
Any of the medications that they believe work. I mean, when a physician and a patient come to an agreement that, look, we don't know whether something is going to have the effect we want it to have, but it's certainly better than doing nothing. That's called informed consent. Something, by the way, that's not being done with the experimental drugs called vaccines.
Right. Gosh, it's so important to know this. Well, and another thing that I think that we can do is stop this movement that we're going to have to show proof of vaccine in order to participate in society. So while they might not force the vaccines, they'll make it so where we cannot buy, sell, trade, work, go to school. And I think that those things also infringe upon our rights. And I can't even take penicillin. Do you think I'm going to take the vaccine? No.
Well, I think that there's a lesson to learn from history here. Mm-hmm. And I think we only need to hearken back to the 1940s. When the Nazis put stars on Jews and prevented them from doing things because they felt that they were inferior and should not be allowed to do it. I do not believe that the federal government should be allowed to mandate or require an experimental drug be tested on the U.S. population for the express purpose of controlling a disease that doesn't occur any more often than somebody who isn't vaccinated when you look at the EUA documents.
Social Impact will be right back. Make sure you subscribe to the OBBM Network podcast on Spotify, iHeart, Apple, or Google, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Strong business has always been the clear economic indicator. Work Suites in Allen, Texas is just one of 18 locations in DFW and Houston that support your necessary transitions with full service and affordable workspaces for upgrading or downsizing your current workload. You need to be focused on growth. Trust the office experts and helpful staff at Work Suites to take care of everything else, from dedicated phone lines and internet to furnished executive and co-working spaces. The OBBM network has tripled our business in the short months we've been with Work Suites and encourages you to step out boldly, make the tough decisions, and give back to work your way. Your nation depends on it. The OBBM network acknowledges that this is a pivotal time in history, and it is clear the United States of America has been undermined by many of our elected officials for some time now. We want our local business audience to stand strong in the face of what we now understand, and to be empowered to grow our businesses on the local level beyond the limitations that have been imposed upon us. We believe it is in our national interest to inspire our communities through strong economic development and, additionally, to hold our elected officials accountable for accurate representation of we the people. For that reason, we encourage you to go to WeStandForFreedom.com to learn about the national Write Your Congressman organization that has been the trusted communication tool for local communities for over 60 years. Learn how your representatives are voting. Understand the laws and regulations under consideration on the state and federal level before they are enacted at the county and city levels. Communicate directly with these officials and stand up for yourself, for by doing so, you will protect the communities you serve from tyrannical rule and unconstitutional reforms. The OBBM Network is the premier voice for local business, and we take that responsibility seriously. The OBBM Network has everything you need to grow and transition your business for success on popular syndicated podcast networks, Roku and other video channels, and the OBBM Network app.
We work for you, local business, and we've got your back.
How do you feel about masks?
Well, I think if the children are doing surgery, they should definitely be masked.
I don't want children performing surgery on me. So therefore,
I've seen enough people doing surgery that behave like children to do the surgery that I think there's a question about that. The masks prevent the spread of water droplets that may carry the virus. So if people are coughing or sneezing, there is a real benefit for those individuals being masked. But as you've probably heard me say before, I thought that this was something that most people's parents addressed with them when they were children, that if you were coughing and sneezing, not to go out and cough and sneeze on people. You know, I took criticism from my children because I would cough in my hands and then got reprimanded by them because I was supposed to cough in my elbow. Now,
things change.
We can argue about that. The reality is I would then wash my hands like you probably should be washing your clothes and you should wash anything you're coughing and sneezing upon. I think most people realize, I hope most people realize that if they're not feeling well, that they shouldn't go out there and spread whatever it is that isn't making them feel well. One of the problems with the vaccines, and Fauci himself has commented on this and admitted it, these vaccines do not prevent you from getting infected or transmitting the virus. What they do is they diminish the symptoms that you have, which means it's essentially turning you into an asymptomatic carrier. But if you're a symptomatic carrier and you're coughing and sneezing, you could put a mask on, or you could also do what your mom and dad probably taught you a long time ago, which is to stay home and not cough and sneeze on your brother and sister or husband and wife or your dog or anything else, or your friend or your family worker or somebody else. If you're coughing and sneezing, don't go to school. Don't cough and sneeze on other people. That's just a matter of etiquette if it's not science. And the fact that we're conducting this approach is somewhat boggling. I mean, this is kind of a flipped up society. We've never quarantined the healthy. We've never panned cultured people for a disease that we didn't think that they had. And we've never prevented people from getting treated with treatment that seems to work. And we've never provided a mandatory vaccine or tried to force people or encourage people to take a vaccine that doesn't work any better than not being vaccinated does.
Amen. Quarantine is when you restrict the movement of the sick. Tyranny is when you restrict the movement of the healthy. And that's exactly what we're under right now is tyranny. All right. Well, you're listening to Social Impact with Lynn Davenport. Thank you, Dr. Richard Fleming, for coming and talking with us today. I think what you have shared with us today will help empower us to fight at the local level, to understand what we're dealing with, and to be able to take care of our own health and advocate for ourselves. So I appreciate it.
I would encourage people to make decisions about what they need to do for themselves and the people they care about, because if you're expecting the cavalry to come over the hill, you're the cavalry.
That's right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Social Impact Podcast on the OBBN Network. Available on Spotify, Apple, Google, iHeart, and anywhere you enjoy listening to podcasts. For more information about how you can get involved to educate our local DFW communities or to be a guest or sponsor of Social Impact Podcast, call 214-673-4018. For OBBM Network programming information or permissions for reproduction segments of the show, call 214-714-0495. Social Impact Podcast is created by Offbeat Business Media, LLC. For the OBBM Network, unauthorized use of this content, the Social Impact Podcast or OBBM Network brands are expressly prohibited.